Remember trips in the car with the family when you were a kid, getting in a swimsuit, heading for the beach, getting yelled at by your sister or slapped in the face by your brother, having your parents pull the car over to chastise one and all? Maybe none of that ever happened in your family, but sibling rivalry is a normal part of life in the multiple child family and can get pretty intense at times. Our guest this hour has some ideas on how to relieve the tension. Dr. Laura Markham is the author of Peaceful Parent, Happy Siblings, How to Stop the Fighting and Raise Friends for Life. Dr. Markham has a PhD in clinical psychology from Columbia. She works as a parenting coach and is the creator of the website ahaparenting.com, inviting parents to find and share aha moments in parenting. Her first book is Peaceful Parent, Happy Kids, so clearly a sequel here. Dr. Laura Markham, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You got my attention at the very start of this book about when you write about how your son reacted when his sister was born. What happened there?
Well, he was 4 years old, so I waited a long time knowing how hard it is to have kids close together. It's just more patience required of the parent. So I was surprised that he still had a hard time. He sort of panicked when she appeared and said, "Can we send her back now?" And I hate her. I don't know why, I just do. And you know, what I found was when I initially thought to myself, oh my goodness, you can't hate this poor, innocent, little, tiny baby. He looked like this huge monster next to her, you know. I said, you know, oh, how can you say such a thing? And immediately he sort of got even more stony-faced. And quickly I started saying, oh, sweetie, it must be so hard to share us. Sometimes you really wish we could just send her back, huh? I understand. You know, you can always come and tell me when you feel this way. I always want to hear. And I would give him a big hug, and his face would just sort of relax, and his whole body would relax. And then he'd go off and play with his trains. And about half an hour later, I would see him go over to the baby and sort of stroke her gently.
Wow. I can hear some of what you did there. I mean, you let him know that he'd been heard, but without agreeing with him,
yes,
quite the way that he felt.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right. Yes. Right. You don't want to say, oh, I agree with you. Your sister's hateful, you know, or, right, or it's good to hate your sister. But absolutely, he's not really, you know, hate is just a position we take. It's a way we say, I'm so mad about this. I'm never going to work things out with that person. That's what hate is. It's our position that we take. So I wasn't going to get into endorsing his position. What I was trying to do was speak to the feelings that caused him to take that position, the feeling that he'd been pushed out, that he had to share way too much and had to, you know, every time I'm dealing with the baby, he has to wait his turn, which even for a four-year-old is really hard.
And it sounds like, Dr. Markham, you did what any of us would do. You looked for advice, and what was out there already?
Well, there's a very good book by Adele Faber and Elaine Maslach that was written in the 1970s, so it's old by now. And, of course, my daughter is now 19, so this was when the book was more current. But even then, even though I love that book, it wasn't very helpful to me with a four-year-old and a baby. It's really geared for parents of older kids. And so I wanted something for, you know, a family that was introducing a baby into the family, and there really wasn't much out there. So instead, I read all the research that I could find. There were a lot of research studies, and there are even more today. So this book is really the book I wished I had had. It's a gift to parents of the book that I needed when my second child was born. And it incorporates all the most recent research, and that includes research on how to handle emotions, because, you know, once kids can regulate their emotions, they can regulate their behavior, and that's usually what gets in the way. They know they're not supposed to hit their brother. They do it because their emotions get the better of them. So my hope in writing this book was that I would give parents the tools to help kids regulate emotions, and really that starts with a parent learning to regulate their own emotions.
I noticed that. Regulate our own emotions is step one. Stay connected to the kid is step two. And coach instead of control is step three. So darn it, we have to be the ones in control. We have to be the adults.
We have to act like the grown-up. It's hard.
Isn't that funny? So set the stage for us. We've established that sibling rivalry is normal, but, I mean, this is just, it's unavoidable, it sounds like.
I think it's unavoidable because when you think about it, kids are in competition for scarce resources, our time and attention. But what we can do is we can help each child to feel very connected to us. We can sort of deepen and sweeten the relationship we have with each child individually, and that helps that child not feel so threatened. You know, I joke that because our genes are really from the Stone Age, you know, our evolution proceeds very slowly and our genes change very slowly. So when the baby appears, the older child is sitting there looking at the baby on daddy's lap and thinking, if a tiger jumps out of the bushes, who's daddy going to save? Right? So naturally, there's going to be some sibling rivalry. They're a little threatened. And so it's our job to help them still feel seen, heard, valued, cherished, adored, and appreciated. And at the same time, give them skills, because all human beings have a hard time getting along. So all our children need help to put their needs and wants into words without attacking the other person. So we're teaching sort of basic problem solving and social skills to get their needs met.
So it's a parent-to-child connection then, but I mean, do we mess things up by trying to interfere in the relationship between the siblings?
That's a great question. So it depends on how we do it. If we interfere by noticing one kid has just done something mean to the other, and we jump in and say to that kid, how could you? You know better. You're the oldest. You know, go to the naughty step, or go to your room, or even, you give that back right now. How could you do that to your brother? What's happening is both children feel like you have just symbolically taken your love from one child and given it to the other child, and it breeds more resentment. So if you interfere in that way, if you intervene in that way, you absolutely will make things worse between your children and create more sibling rivalry. Right. But there is a different way to do it.
Okay. Many more intervention strategies to talk about with Dr. Laura Markham. She's the author of Peaceful Parent, Happy Siblings, the follow-up to Peaceful Parent, Happy Kids. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange when we come back from a break. Back with Dr. Laura Markham and you in a minute 20. You're back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today with Dr. Laura Markham, the author of Peaceful Parent, Happy Siblings, a book about how to stop the fighting and raise friends for life. And it's a bit more detailed than what our parents might have done. You know, in other words, things that go beyond just, if you kids don't stop, I'll turn this car around. You can join the discussion on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. This is not just about a real laissez-faire attitude. We're not just talking about letting the kids go to their own devices here, are we, Dr. Laura?
We're not, because when you do that, kids learn that the bigger child, usually the more powerful child, wins. You know, it basically promotes bullying. Because if we just let them, you know, the usual advice is let them work it out for themselves. It's fine to hold back and watch what happens, and sometimes they can work it out themselves. And, you know, when they're very little, like the toddler taking the toy from the baby and then giving it back and then taking the toy and giving it back, that's a form of play. So the toddler's not actually being mean to the baby, and the baby doesn't care. They're enjoying interacting with the older child. But when there's actual meanness, if we just let that happen, we're giving the message that that's okay, that that's a fine way to interact with each other. So instead, parents can jump in, it's true, but first calm themselves down a little bit and then more move in as opposed to jump and say, wow, I hear loud voices. You two are having a hard time, huh? What's going on? So even if you're pretty sure that one kid just knocked down the other one's tower, the toddlers, they're crying and the older one's looking shamefaced. They were just building their block towers happily and now one tower's on the floor. Even if you're pretty sure what happened, you're not making your child wrong. You're going in and acknowledging that there's a problem between them. Because the child who did the knocking down of the tower, he's got a reason for it. It may not be a good reason from our perspective, but there's a reason. So if you can go in and say, wow, Wow, Michael's crying. Oh, sweetie, your tower fell down. I'm so sorry. And he's like pointing to his brother. He knocked it down. And his brother's looking at you and you say, wow, we have two upset boys here. What's going on? Tell me about it. And of course, you first help the one who's crying to stop, but you're staying warmly connected to the other child if you can. If you're too angry at him, just don't look at him until you can take a few deep breaths and calm yourself a little bit. And then you let them tell you what happened. And you're not doing this so you can prove that one of them's wrong. You're not taking sides. You're saying, oh, so Michael, you're so upset because Henry knocked your tower down. Oh, sweetie, no wonder you're upset. You worked so hard on that. And Henry, you're upset. He has just told you this, right? So you're restating it. You're upset because you wanted that beautiful special block that you like to put on the top of your tower and your brother wouldn't give it to you, huh? And you got so mad you took the block out from the bottom of his tower and knocked his tower down. That's what happened, huh? Wow, you must have really wanted that block, huh? And you notice that you're doing this without judgment.
Mm-hmm.
What you're doing is you're helping the kids to not only say what they need and what they want and feel heard, but to listen to each other. So there's a little more empathy beginning here. If instead you had jumped in and said, Henry, how could you do that to your brother? To the naughty step. You think about what you did. Henry would not be sitting on the naughty step thinking about what a bad person he is. He would be sitting there thinking about what a bad person his brother is. And he would not be thinking, oh, I want to be a better big brother. He'd be thinking, she loves him more. Mom loves him more. He always gets his way. She doesn't even understand. He took my special block.
And
it's all his fault.
Yeah,
right?
And he got me in trouble, and therefore there's even greater resentment engendered there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly, exactly. But when you listen to both sides, then you're able to then say both boys have been heard. They've both calmed down. You know, Michael, stop crying. You say, so we have a big problem. Not only are you two having a hard time deciding who gets the special block, the one special block, but also now Michael's tower is wrecked. What do you wonder what we could do to fix this and make things better? We have two very upset boys. And at this point, the older kid looks at you and says, well, or maybe looks at his brother even after a while, if you've done this before, he looks at you and says, well, I guess I could help Michael build his tower again if he won't grab my special block. If he'll, you know, like he's actually wants to make amends. He's just trying to make sure his needs get met too. And you say, okay, so one thing we could do to make this better, Michael, did you hear that? Henry wants to help you make your tower again. I guess that means, Henry, you wish you hadn't knocked it down, huh? I do wish I hadn't knocked it down, but he did take my block. So now we hear that vulnerability in his voice. He's now starting to actually soften up a little bit. He's not so defended and angry. He's just trying to get his own needs met. And here's Michael, the two-year-old, who of course took the block because he's two, right? So now you can help them figure out, well, how do they take turns with that block? Or is there some other special block that Michael can use or whatever? But you're basically helping them see that we can always work things out with each other. And it doesn't have to breed resentment. At the end of that interaction, not only have the boys repaired their relationship, they're closer, they're working together to rebuild the tower, and they're more confident of their ability to work things out with each other. So next time, you may not even have to be involved. And certainly over time, if you do this for 3 months, it really transforms your children's relationship so they can work things out with each other.
All right, so coaching instead of controlling, which is, again, one of the major tenets of the book. But, you know, first part of this, though, is regulating our own emotions. And if this has happened 16 times that day, you know, the first reaction is going to be to scream at the kids for some people.
Yes.
So give us an idea of regulating emotions in this context versus just stuffing or denying them.
Great question. So stuffing emotion is when we don't even acknowledge we have it. So if you say to the child, don't be angry at your brother, it wasn't his fault, you're telling the child not to have an emotion that he already has. And he doesn't really have any choice. He can't not have the emotion. All he can do is not have awareness of the emotion. So he sort of stuffs it down and he tries not to be mad at his brother. But meanwhile, that emotion is in his, I call it the emotional backpack, which it's repressed. It's no longer under conscious control. So the next time the brother does something, even mildly annoying, that anger will burst out and he will yell at the brother or hit the brother or say something mean. So we don't want to encourage our kids or ourselves to stuff our emotions. It's fine to acknowledge them. But what we want to do is to take a deep breath and actually feel the emotion instead of just lashing out. What most of us do when we feel terrible is we automatically lash out, which is really a way of taking that feeling we couldn't handle and putting it on someone else, make them feel bad instead of us.
It sounds like part of the impulse here, that what needs to happen is you need to identify what you're feeling before you start expressing it.
I think that's exactly right. We start by identifying it, and then I encourage parents to tolerate it. So if you're hearing the kids beginning to bicker from the other room, and you're just trying to get dinner on the table, start by just take a deep breath, which will keep you from just reacting, right? Notice what you're feeling. I am so fed up. Can't they even get along for 5 minutes? I'm just so fed up with this. Oh, I just need to get dinner on the table. I'm so tired. This has been such a frustrating day, right? So notice what you're feeling. Acknowledge it. And then take a breath and let yourself feel it. It might even sort of swamp you, but resist your impulse to lash out, because what happens is we can't tolerate the feeling and we want to do anything to stop it. And here are the three things we do: fight, flight, or freeze. Fight means we go lash out at our kids and we yell at our kids. Freeze might mean we open the refrigerator and look for something to numb ourselves out with. You know, if it's dinner time, we might even pour a glass of wine. And flight means we open a screen, or I talk to parents all day, every day, right? And parents tell me, I just want to walk out of the house and keep going. That impulse is the flight impulse. But it is true that the children bickering is what's bringing up these feelings. But in fact, it's our reaction to their bickering that makes us feel so bad. And we don't have to lash out. We don't have to pour a glass of wine. We don't have to leave the house and head for Tahiti. We can stop. We can say to ourselves, it's not an emergency. And we can resist any of those three things and just breathe. And you know what's amazing? The secret of emotion. When we let ourselves feel it, it begins to diminish, to evaporate those emotions. We can take another deep breath and say, yeah, it has been a hard day, but you know what? It's not an emergency. No one's killing anyone. It's going to be okay. I'm going to go in and see if I can get them into a more, you know, it's a hard time of day. I'm going to go in and see if I can get them into an activity that separates them a little bit, or have one of them come help me in the kitchen or something. And we'll get through the evening. It's going to be okay. And you've just figured out how you can regulate yourself, so you're helping the children solve the problem instead of what we usually do is we inflame the problem when we jump in with our guns blazing when we're so, you know, when we're upset. We just make everything worse.
Dr. Laura Markham is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, psychologist, parenting coach, the creator of the website ahaparenting.com. She's the author of the new book, Peaceful Parent, Happy Siblings, How to Stop the Fighting and Raise Friends for Life. Your observations about dealing with your own siblings and how your parents dealt with those as a kid, or your own dealing with sibling rivalry as a parent yourself. More than welcome here on the Exchange. 800-838-3760 across the listening area. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Jeannie in Medford, thanks for waiting. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, good morning. I'm thinking about two of my sons that were arguing, and they got louder and louder. They were little guys, and I said, you guys, it's okay to argue, but take it outside. I don't want to hear it anymore. And so they went out. I said, don't come back inside until you're done, until you figure it out, work it out. And it was dark out in the desert. I closed the door. I could hear them talking through the air conditioner. He goes, well, for just about a minute. And then he goes, the little one goes, she locked the door. And he goes, we better figure this out. And all of a sudden they knocked real humbly. We figured it out. They wanted to come inside.
All right. Well, so I gave you some peace anyway.
Him too.
All right. Thanks for that, Jeannie. Appreciate it. So let's talk about the proper moves then. I mean, you'd say that punishment or permissiveness makes things worse, Laura. Should there be any sanctions, though? I mean, in the scenario described with the blue block, you're really working with the kids to get back in there and fix things promptly. Is there any correct time for a timeout, or are you kids go outside and work things out?
Well, absolutely there are times when they can work things out. And as I said, once we have taught them sort of basic skills, you can absolutely expect them to work things out. But often we haven't actually taught those skills. We've just said you work it out and not given them the help to do it. So with the Henry and Michael and the blocks example, you know, the bigger one is just going to dominate the little one, and what you're teaching basically is might makes right. And I don't think that's the message we want to teach. So I encourage kids always to speak up for themselves. So if one of them is dominating the other, you can say, you know, it looks like Devin's having a hard time here. Devin, are you having fun with this still? You know, Devin, look at his face, honey. He doesn't, you can say to your other child, you know, look at his face, David. Devin doesn't look like he's still having fun with this. Devin, can you tell your brother? That's too rough for me. You know, so you're helping your kids. You know, we say use your words, which is great, as opposed to hitting, but we mostly have to teach kids the words to use. They don't actually know how to say, you know, that's too rough for me, or, you know, I don't like it when you talk to me that way, or I want to turn to, or whatever. And we can actually teach them to do that. So you're asking, is there room for sanctions, or are there appropriate times? When I say that we're not punishing them, that's because punishment teaches the wrong lessons. Punishment teaches kids to watch their backs. It doesn't teach them to soften their hearts and reach out to somebody to try to solve a problem. So I don't think that punishment actually teaches what we want kids to learn. It moves them into fight, flight, or freeze, so they aren't, in fact, the learning centers of the brain shut down. But there absolutely is tremendous room to teach them the lessons we want them to learn. And the number one lesson is be kind. You know, in our house, our number one rule is the golden rule. We treat people the way we want to be treated. That means be kind. And then say, if you've just heard your daughter be mean to her sister, you know, Sophia, those are some words that could really hurt your sister's feelings. Are you mad at your sister about something? Because you can tell her without attacking her if you're mad at her. Or are you just feeling grumpy? What's going on? And at that point, Sophia may turn around and say to you, Mom, it's so bad, a hard day, blah, blah, blah. Or might say to you, but Dad, it's not fair. Sophia always blah, 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 right? In which case, she needs some help to work out a problem with her sister. Or maybe she'll say, I just hate her, you know, which sometimes kids will do that and say, and then you're back to, wow, you feel so upset at her that you don't even want to work things out with her. That's what hate means. You never want to work things out with that person. You must be really, really upset. You can tell your sister why you're upset, and you can tell me why you're upset. I want to hear. But you can't attack her. It's not okay to use mean words. And at that point, you're helping your child to express so she feels heard. And maybe she really feels like everybody's, you know, this other kid is everybody's favorite. You know, grandma and grandpa are always nicer to her or whatever. And having to put those things into words is actually really helpful to dissolve some longstanding resentment. But it doesn't mean she's allowed to attack her sister. So when you say, is there any room for sanctions? Absolutely, there's room to uphold the rules of civility. And when you do that, what the research shows is that children do it with each other. Children, when you do that, children will begin saying to each other when they're bickering, you're not allowed to use mean words like that. Mm-hmm. You can tell me without attacking me. It's amazing to hear a six-year-old say that, but in fact, it works.
Dr. Laura Markham's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Peaceful Parent, Happy Siblings. Here is John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. You know, when I was in college, I took a psych class, and it was about the three types of discipline, which is aggressive, assertive, and passive. And then for years, I taught high school psych, and I would role play with the kids these items. And if people don't know this, you know, let's say your kid, I don't know, refuses to do something out of it. Could be anything, a little kid, or it could be a high school kid who doesn't show up for practice. Assertive, you know, aggressive is, you know, you're screaming and yelling at them and telling them they're an idiot and maybe even hitting them. And passive is, you know, the little kid whines at you for a popsicle and you finally go, fine, whatever, which, of course, the kid just learned that. And then assertive, which is, if this makes sense, and I want your guests to comment on, assertive, where you go, these are your options. If you want to have a popsicle, you have to do these. You have to eat your dinner first, and I'm not giving into that. And so I don't know if that's helpful or if you've done that type of thing, but it's so true, even of adults, much less little kids. So
all
thanks.
Right.
I just took your comments.
All right. Thanks for that, John. Appreciate it.
John, I love that. That is, there's a lot of research on this that supports exactly what you just said. And the parents who raise kids in those three types, we've watched the kids grow up and done longitudinal studies. And what we found out is, the aggressive kind of parenting raises kids who are angry And believe it or not, they're not even self-disciplined because the discipline was always outside them. They never chose to behave. And the passive raises kids who are spoiled and not considerate of other people and, again, not particularly self-disciplined. But the assertive, where you set the rules that need to be set and the boundaries and the limits, but you do it kindly and reasonably, and you understand the child's feelings as you do it, and you say, I know, you really want a popsicle. I understand. They look so good. And you know what? Yes, after dinner. Not until you eat your dinner. You know, then the kid learns self-discipline because, all right, at least I feel understood. I'll go along with mom and dad when they set this rule.
What if, and you asked this question yourself in the book, what if empathy doesn't work if the kid is not getting with the program as you would hope they would?
So when you're empathizing with the child, you're saying around the popsicle or around, you know, you're so upset at your sibling. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Then I would look at why. Like, what is it that's getting in the kid's way? I would absolutely uphold your rule. I wouldn't give in and give them the popsicle just because they're still protesting, and I certainly wouldn't let them hit their brother just because they're so angry at him. But I would want to know, what's that big feeling that he needs some help with? Maybe there's some long simmering resentment, or maybe often I see this with older kids, like a 9-year-old. Somebody could be mean to the 9-year-old on the playground, and he comes home and he takes it out on his brother and treats his brother the same way. So I'd want to be curious and dig a little deeper about why the child is acting this way.
All right. Peaceful Parent, Happy Siblings is the book. Dr. Laura Markham, its author and our guest, back on the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Laura and you in a minute. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is the psychologist, Dr. Laura Markham. She works as a parenting coach, is the creator of the website, ahaparenting.com, and the author of a new book called Peaceful Parent, Happy Siblings, How to Stop the Fighting and Raise Friends for Life. It's a discussion you can join on the Jefferson Exchange. Talk about raising your own kids and trying to keep the siblings apart or at least peacefully together in your household, or what you experienced as a sibling yourself growing up. 800-838-3760 around the region if you'd like to join us by email jx@jeffnet.org. Laura, forgive me if I've been calling you Dr. Laura. I kind of slid into that a few times. You're not
either way.
The other Dr. Laura, Dr. Laura Schlesinger.
Right.
Yeah. So we were talking about trying to get the kids to express their feelings clearly and then, you know, be able to talk about what it is that's troubling them and dig a little deeper in some circumstances if there's things they're taking out at home that might have come from someplace else.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, it's a famous story that the guy, you know, is at work and his boss yells at him and he comes home and yells at his wife and the wife yells at the kid and the kid kicks the cat, right? And, you know, a 9-year-old who's having a hard time at school, maybe he doesn't know the answer when the teacher calls on him. Maybe he's struggling in athletics and the other boys are making fun of him. Who knows, right? It could be just, you know, she's at school and the mean girls won't let her sit at their table. And the kid comes home, and what are they going to do with those feelings? They're usually embarrassed to tell their parents because they are afraid their parents will think less of them. I know it sounds crazy. They should be able to go to their parents for help, but most kids are embarrassed. But those feelings will come out somewhere, and they come out usually in mistreatment of a sibling. So if you've set standards of civility, if you are spending time alone with each child every day to solidify that relationship, if you're empathizing with your kids, no matter what they say, oh, it's raining today, I hate that rain. You know, you want to say, well, the plants need the rain. Instead, you say, you sound so disappointed. Sounds like you really didn't want it to rain today. That's empathy. You just see it from their point of view. And if you do those things routinely, your kids will trust you and they'll usually talk with you and they usually won't build up a lot of emotional baggage that they're taking out on their sibling. But sometimes they do, and you know, then you really want to be curious about it and try to understand what's actually going on with them. And the best way is really by asking some open-ended questions and listening to the answers rather than grilling them where they'll just shut down.
Oh, so to make sure, again, that your own emotions are under control first. It's like, why did you do that? It's like, okay, tell me about your day. What's going on?
Exactly, exactly.
All right, let's take a call from Sandy in Mount Shasta. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Laura Markham.
Yeah, hi, Jeffrey. Hi, Laura. Well, Laura, you're one of my heroes. A couple of years ago, through a serendipitous series of events, I decided to start studying early childhood education and development, and somebody turned me on to your blog, and I found it invaluable in deepening my understanding of working with kids. And
so you've been saying aha.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know several other people who are in early childhood who also admire your work. And I think what you're saying is so important, because there's a trend in our culture that really disturbs me, where I kind of wish that what you're teaching was in, you know, taught in school to prepare people for parenthood. Because I think people, when they, by the time they have their kids, an awful lot of the time, they've lost any sense of what it was like to be a child. And I really feel like I've learned more from, I've studied psychology and various forms of therapy and everything for my whole life, but I feel like I've learned more in the last 2 years from studying early childhood development than from anything else, and I understand myself better. Mm-hmm. And there's a trend like that's probably personified by the, you may have seen those Facebook postings where people have pages where they post videos or photos of children crying, and then they kind of mock why the child is crying.
Yes.
They basically belittle the reason the child is crying.
Yes.
People seem to find that really funny, and I find it really disrespectful to kids, because what you're talking about, there is no shortcut to developing emotional regulation. No child can regulate themselves. They all have to learn that. And I think far too many times parents and adults just assume, well, what's wrong with this kid? He's not, what? He's upset about this little thing? Geez, isn't that immature? Well, yes, it is, because that child's brain can't handle the kind of regulation that an adult can do. So keep up the good work.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for that, Sandy. Appreciate that. So, Laura,
Sandy, thanks so much.
When do you realize that it's time to go back and do some remedial stuff? I mean, how do you sort of monitor the kids' progress to know if they're getting the lessons you've been teaching, if they're taking the coaching well?
You watch their behavior. So obviously, you're not going to decide you're going to address 10 problems at once, or your child is going to feel like they're under siege. So maybe their table manners could use some work, and maybe they're not working as hard on their homework as you would like, and, you know, they're not brushing their teeth as thoroughly as you would like, and they're being mean to their brother. I would go with mean to their brother every time as your number one priority. What matters is how your child treats other human beings. You know, he drops his jacket on the floor every day when he comes home. It may annoy the heck out of you, but that's not the thing you need to focus on. The thing you need to focus on is, how does he treat other people? Start there, and then you can work on the other things. So I would pick one thing, the most important thing, and coach your child, work on it. You'll see other things begin to improve, because as you strengthen your relationship with your child will become more cooperative. And instead of rolling his eyes when you ask him to pick up his jacket off the floor, he'll say, "Oh, sorry, Dad," and pick it up, right? So as you work on any one problem, the first thing you're always doing is regulating yourself, and then that means your child is more likely to want to follow your lead instead of resenting you. And the second thing you're doing is always connecting with the child. And again, that helps the child want to follow your lead. But then the third thing, the coaching will be very individual, and it will depend. But emotion coaching, the kind of thing that Sandy was just talking about, is really what you're doing most of the time. And really, it's all day, every day. And as you do that emotion coaching, you'll see your child begin to shift. And if they don't, I would say back up, spend time with them every day, empathize more, and get them laughing. Laughter is this huge resource that parents don't know about. But what laughter does is it transforms the body chemistry. It reduces the stress hormones that make us edgy and reactive. And it increases the feel-good hormones and the bonding hormones like oxytocin. So when you're laughing with your child, if you're roughhousing with them, you and your child are bonding. And often it's a great way, if your child's giving you a hard time, like let's say your five-year-old drops their jacket on the floor when you come inside and doesn't, and you say, Hey, pick up that jacket. Buddy, what do you think this is? And your kid rolls his eyes at you, which even five-year-olds have been known to do. You could just stalk over and glare at him. You could smile and say, sweetly modeling, you know, like you're modeling for your child. Oh, yes, Dad, I'll pick it up right away. And your child will roll his eyes again and laugh and hang up his jacket. Or you're using humor. Or you could go over, pick your child up, throw them up in the air and say, "I saw those eyes roll just now. I think you're out of hugs again." and toss him around a bunch, get him laughing, dump him on the couch. He'll probably come running back for more because it's the best thing that's happened to him all day, and that laughter feels really good. And you'll toss him around some more. And then finally, you're snuggling together on the couch, and you say, hey, wait a minute, the jacket, come on, let's go. And he's going to run over and pick up his jacket. And you'll find that for the rest of the day, he'll also be a lot nicer to his brother because you've helped him with the anxiety. He walked in the door with all of the pent-up feelings from, you know, from a day at school and from the curveballs that life throws at all of us.
You're an advocate of roughhousing, not just parent to kid, but kid to kid as well, it appears in the book. But you know, as a parent, how do you monitor it closely enough so that you don't get into the situations where somebody's always getting an elbow in the eye and ends up crying?
Yeah, I think this is what all parents are afraid of, so they're afraid to let their kids roughhouse. You know, one reason that I'm a fan of roughhousing is that it actually helps children learn to modulate their aggression. And when you think about, you know, a litter of puppies or bear cubs, they all roughhouse with each other. And they do this little mock fighting thing. And they roll around and they, you know, snarl at each other. But they're not actually hurting each other. And human children actually are not trying to hurt each other either. As long as you don't have a situation where, again, there's longstanding resentment. So I would start by, if your kids like to roughhouse, I would start by saying, you know, I worry that someone's going to get hurt. I think we need to just talk about some rules to make sure we're all know what the rules are so nobody gets hurt. And children, even if they can't write yet or read yet, they love the written word. It has a lot of power to them. So I would like take a piece of paper and say, what are your rules for roughhousing? And if they look at you blankly, you could say, well, how about stop means stop? If anybody else stops, everybody has to freeze, right? Let's practice that right now. Okay, we're writing that one down. Anything else? And one of the kids might say, no punching in the stomach or no hitting in the face or whatever. And you say, okay, we're writing that one down. Okay, is that enough rules or do we need anything else? Okay, well, I've got one as the parent. Only outside or only in the basement on the, you know, tumbling mat or whatever, so that they're not roughhousing in a place where they're going to be breaking your lamps or whatever or knock their head into the fireplace stone or something. So you're laying ground rules, and everybody knows those ground rules. The second thing I would do is if you've had kids get hurt before, I would stand by and watch the first couple times that you do this to see how they're doing. And if one of them starts to look very fixated and fierce and they're not really laughing, I'd stop it. Because the point of the roughhousing is to have fun. And if he's sort of going for the juggler, you know, got the killer instinct, he's going for the juggler at this point, I would stop and say, let's everybody take a deep breath. Is everybody still having fun with this? And probably the kid who's on the receiving end of that kind of fierceness is going to say, I don't want to play anymore, I'm done. And you can say, okay, you guys can wrestle again some other time when you want to wrestle. And I'd give him a hug and say, go get yourself a drink of water. And then I'd go to the one who was being fierce and give him a hug and say, were you enjoying that? And he might be, I'm going to win next time. And you see, you know, he's starting to tell you about what was actually going on. And you say, sounds like it's really important for you to win. You don't like losing, do you? No, I don't think anybody likes to lose. But, you know, your brother's a little younger than you are. So it's not okay to hurt him. It's fine to roughhouse, but it's not okay to hurt him. So you're starting to bring his awareness to what he's actually doing because he's, you know, he's a kid. He doesn't have that much awareness of what actually happened. And now he's starting to see, oh, yeah, I got a little inappropriately enraged here and it wasn't really about my brother, right? And maybe something even comes up. Well, when I wrestle with my friends, they always win and I hate losing, right? And then you have something you can work with.
Here's a call from Julie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Laura Markham, the author of Peaceful Parent, Happy Siblings.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a story. It's short, I guess. My mother shocked my brother and I one time when we were fighting and pounding on each other. And I'm older, and my brother was told, you're not supposed to hit girls. So that gave me even more leverage until I became more socially conscious. And one day we were fighting, and my mom finally gave up, and she said that to us, go ahead, savages, kill each other. And it just, like, there was no more boundary. it took away whatever we were trying to get from the fighting, like the attention from our mother. And I know that sounds really bad, but it shocked us both so much. And I, being the older one, I know that every time thereafter when we were fighting, if she didn't intervene, I wondered about what would that be if we killed each other. You know, that's pretty extreme. And so basically most of our differences would subside and go away. We weren't necessarily taught to work things out, but we did find a way because we were left to work things out. And I even finally developed a consciousness about, well, just because I'm a girl doesn't mean I can pick on him more. Mm-hmm. It wasn't fair, and I could see the unfairness in that. And I also feel that it was valuable that my parents taught my brother as a male gendered species of the species to not be abusive like that to women. I think that was really good. And finally, I got more of the wisdom of it instead of a power trip that I was on for a while.
Julie, thanks for the story. Appreciate it. We're just almost out of time. I want to give Laura a chance to get back in here.
I think, Julie, that is wonderful to hear how you went through that process and that your experience allowed you to come to your own discoveries. Sometimes that happens and sometimes it doesn't. And so I've also heard the stories where the parents didn't intervene and kids basically got tortured by their siblings. So I think we have to know our kids before we would do that kind of an intervention.
Can we very quickly talk about the concept of the scheduled meltdown? That's just a really interesting concept.
Well, we all know that sometimes we just need a good cry. And we talked earlier about how emotions don't just go away if we say we shouldn't be feeling them. So if your kid comes home, this is sort of famous. You know, your 4-year-old comes home from preschool and he's just all nasty. He's nasty to his little sister and he's nasty to you. You know he's got some big feelings in there he needs to express. So I'd go right in there and say, whoa. That's not okay, and set a limit about whatever he's doing that's not okay, and be really kind about it. And as he meets the futility, you know, that wall of you're saying, no, this is a firm limit, but at the same time, your kindness, often he'll begin to cry. And afterwards, you'll see a whole different kid.
Okay, got to go. Dr. Laura Markham, Peaceful Parent, Happy Siblings. Thanks so much.